Welcome, fanatics, to a let's call this a hybrid podcast. We got Two Shades of Gray and On the Trail coming at you this week. We are live from the Stansberry headquarters here. I'm with Jared Stansberry and Rob Gray. How you fellas doing?
Doing okay. I prefer to call it a very special podcast. You know, back in the day when sitcom casts would come together for a special episode.
Like a crossover, right?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah.
Just
it's like when
there's some cross pollination going on.
When the CSI Miami crew would meet up with the normal CSI, yep. And they would just solve some crazy crime that was like nationwide. Yeah, that's what this is.
The next time we do this, that's what we're actually going to do.
Somebody needs sunglasses,
but better. We need some cheesy lines.
Yes.
That drop.
Oh, which, we'll have some of those.
Yeah, just stick with us. We'll get there. So spring game was on Saturday. Beautiful day. The tailgating lots were pretty full, I'd say, for a game. Did you guys get out and have a cocktail before the game started?
I had a Busch Light in one of the brand new cans after the game with Ted Flint, but I didn't before the game. I was working before the game.
I started writing. I was writing even during the game to get those two features up on the honorary captain stuff and Leonard Johnson. Leonard Johnson is fascinating with his cooking culinary skills. He told me out the side that he'd gone to Thailand for a month. He's doing it every year in the off season. He's going somewhere a month where he can learn more about that type of cuisine and incorporate it into his style here.
Rob, why am I not surprised of all the players that came back, the one thing that stood out to you was Leonard Johnson's cooking and culinary. Why does that not surprise me?
There's culture involved, my friend.
Yeah, that's I don't care about culture. I just say, let me know what they're doing sports-wise.
Hey, there's culture involved with Matt Campbell, too. Don't downplay that.
Nah. Did you talk to all of the guys?
There were a number that came over. I talked to Reggie Hayward on the side. He was not one of the three. They brought over David Archer. I was talking to Rich. No disrespect, because it was great. I watched the video Krogs did of David Archer, and he was great. They did a nice piece on him over at Cyclones.com, too. But they had Archer over there. They had LJ over there, and they had Todd Blythe.
Okay.
So, good guys. Other guys were milling around, of course, kind of like last year. But
I didn't go down to that. I was at the Jacobson Building, but I was working on other stuff, so I was just chilling.
Very nice. The intention was to get the kids up there early enough to where we could tailgate a little bit, maybe make a lunch, enjoy the beautiful day. We got up there 15 minutes before kickoff, so we did the tailgating afterwards. And when you were up there with three kids, I was not able to have an adult beverage. I was able to later when we were at Sice House of Trivia.
Yep.
But we played catch. It was a beautiful day. Iowa State fans showed up. I thought the crowd was great for a spring game.
I think we should touch on Sice House of Trivia quick.
We'll get there in a second. But you know what I saw in the tailgating lots? I saw a lot of flags flying high. And you know where I can only assume those flags came from?
They better have been from there.
Heartland Flags. HeartlandFlagpoles.com. I'm sure a lot of Cyclone fans got on there, got their flags, and they were flying high. But no, it was a great crowd, great day. Did we learn anything from the spring game?
No, I don't think you never do. I mean, coaches, I'm sure, do to some degree because they're grading some guys out, but that's what the 15 practices are for. I mean, they can highlight. I mean, it's more or less for the fans to do what you wanted to do if you'd gotten there early, but you got to do after the game. Tailgate, reestablish that bond, that camaraderie that they have with the longtime friends, and just see the guys running around out there. And they got to see some cool plays like Joel Lanning picking up Jacob Park pick six, and Park made some really good throws. Mike Warren looked really energized. But I mean, we'll touch on guys that stood out, but it was more about the bonding of the fans, I think, than anything else. Like most spring games,
I'd say that's what all spring games are about. It's more just about the fans like coming out and seeing the team than it is about what actually happens on the field.
Yeah. Two things stood out to me. One, it seemed like a lot of fans had trouble with the scoring system, even though I know
it didn't make any sense.
I didn't mind.
Once you got into the game, it was like, okay, what's happening here?
I thought it was great, but I also had the Cyclones.com, they put out the press release with the scoring system, and then you put it on Cyclone Fanatic. So I had that on my phone, and I was able to kind of keep track. So I enjoyed it. I talked to a coach after the game who said this goes all the way back to Bobby Bowden. I think Bobby Bowden started doing this many, many, many years ago, and some other schools have adopted it. So it's not something Iowa State created or Iowa State's the first school to do. A lot of schools do it. I thought it was cool and unique, but I understand why a lot of fans were confused by it. I wish they probably would have done a little bit better job of explaining. And that was a two-pointer for the defense because of a tackle for loss. I think that would have maybe provided a little bit extra to it. Plus the time issue. I don't know. There was no time clock.
I think that they just said, we're going to play until 2:15, and that's just what we're going to do. That's what I heard standing down on the sidelines.
I was told that they called it a little earlier. They were supposed to do one more series, but everyone, they've been gotten through fairly unfazed with injuries, minus, I think, Cole Anderson got hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other than that, so they decided it was a good time to cut it, which I love. But
and the offense was winning, so they just should just end it there.
They just took a knee.
Yeah.
Take a couple victory formation knees. I was told it's under dispute. The defense thinks a couple points got taken away from them that shouldn't have.
See, would you rather the offense win or the defense win?
Offense.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I think that aesthetically it's more important that the offense wins that thing.
Yeah, and the defense was dominating early.
Yeah.
And actually,
to be honest with you,
I thought the defense played better for the most part than the offense. The offense had that one really good drive where they went maybe 80 yards. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I thought the defense probably performed a little bit better.
Well, the thing the defense did have on their side early in the game was the way that they started on like the 3-yard line.
Yeah.
You know? And then they were running like normal plays from the 3-yard line. And then I think they had a fumbled snap and they got a safety and it was not good. It was not a good start for the offense.
Nope. They had 2 safeties, right?
Yep.
Yeah. It was like right back-to-back, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was behind in rapid succession.
The second thing that stood out to me, I thought that I try to step back a little bit and not get too much in the emotional side of things, but I felt like the coaches seemed a lot more excited and comfortable about where we are right now than where we were last year, and as they should be, right? This second year in the program, they seem to have an identity on the team now where they were struggling to find it this time last year. So those two things stood out to me, but as far as where we're going to be as a team, nothing stands out. You can't really take a whole lot from
that, yeah.
Especially because a lot of guys didn't play.
I think it was just easy to see, like, with Matt Campbell, he seemed more relieved at the end of spring ball than last year. It was like, we could probably use 20 more spring practices.
And 20 more players.
Yeah, and it's just like, but now, there's a little bit more relief. It's like, okay, we're in a pretty good spot where we're at right now. We got a good base built. Now we can work through these 16 weeks. He was really preaching on those 16 weeks and then get ourselves ready to come back in the fall and get after it.
Well, that was something I think I ended up writing about that. And we were both there where Campbell, I like the frankness. Of course, we're used to frankness with Paul Rhodes and the previous staff. So we've been blessed with people who are going to be straight shooters pretty much. But just asking him about the difference of the end of spring ball and for him to just frankly come out and say, man, last year I sat there on that field knowing, man, we didn't have enough. We needed more. And this year felt really good, as you said, tapering it down and heading into those summer workouts, some individual stuff and group stuff. And that can only bode well for the fall.
Yeah. All right. We're going to do some players that stood out then.
2 players that stood out. What do you guys got?
My first one was Ioma Uwazurike. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We'll nod our head and we'll say yes.
I don't know what his stats was. Not that it really matters. But just physically, that dude is impressive. And he's only going to be a redshirt freshman. That's a guy that's going to make a big-time impact at Iowa State before his career is over.
I agree. Not only him, that whole defensive line is as impressive looking as we've seen at Iowa State. And we still
– at least in a while.
Yeah, and Camillo still isn't even on campus yet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Ray Lima didn't play. Hurt his elbow.
Matt Leo didn't play.
You look at those two on the sideline, oh, my gosh. Ray Lima is a massive defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Massive. And I hear he's just as good as he looks.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep.
You have a look on your face that you're, like, being – like that you don't aren't sure about it, but you're just, like – you're just saying it.
No, I mean, you never are sure until they get out and play. But
right.
Here's the thing. If you're going to go with guys that you're a little bit hesitant of because they're coming in from a junior college, you'd rather be hesitant and have them have size.
For sure.
You know what I mean? At least maybe they can hold their position a little bit and let the linebackers go and make plays.
I think they just don't have anybody on that defensive line that looks like they're completely overmatched. You know, like those, like when they'd have to put a guy like Robbie Garcia out there at defensive tackle, or even J.D. Wagner when he was a little bit younger, like Mitch Myers even when he was younger,
Vernell Trent when he was younger.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just like those guys just did not look like they belonged on the field in a Big 12 game. But it doesn't seem like they have that problem anymore.
And to be fair, they probably didn't.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly.
I mean, and they played for Iowa State, and they did as well as they could have. But they were playing on teams that won 3 games, mm-hmm. and if Iowa State's ever going to win more than 3-4 games in a year, they got to get these players that size-wise can compete at the Big 12 level.
I would say it speaks to the character of a guy like Robbie Garcia, the way he was pretty much buried on the depth chart defensively, gets flipped over to the offensive side, completely, essentially a clean slate, and then he works himself into – he's probably not going to be a starter in the fall, but
– he might be in the two deep.
He'll put himself into a position where he could get on the field. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And in terms of guys, maybe pretty obvious, but I thought the way Mike Warren ran with the football, I mean, in a spring game, real purpose, real elusiveness, a real burst I saw from him. I don't know if it was a sluggishness at times last year. And, I mean, it's been documented that there were some issues and all that. And you've got Montgomery coming in and, you know, winning the spot, you know, more or less the number one spot. But I thought he looked really, really good running the football behind that still fairly makeshift line where they're, you know, Jay Cut Campos didn't play, et cetera.
Well, that one touchdown run that he had where he went to the left side and then cut clear back across to the right, that was a really nice play by him to be able to, one, see that cut, but – It was a really nice play by Joel Lanning, too, because he came in there with a full head of steam and blew up that pulling blocker. And it was all on the guys on the backside that pretty much screwed up that whole play because there was just nobody there to get him once he cut back. But that was two really encouraging things that I think you saw in that play. It looked like the old Mike Warren, and then you see Joel Lanning, who's going in there with a full head of steam, willing to put his body on the line and blow somebody up.
Do you know what I almost loved most about that play, too? Because that play was designed to kind of go off the left side. And the only reason Mike Warren was able to cut it back and score a touchdown is, A, Jacob Park made a block down, but I don't even know who the wide receiver was, if it was Jalen Martin or who, but they made a block all the way down the field into the end zone.
I think it was Akeem Butler, maybe.
Was it Akeem Butler? Whoever it was. To me, that is coaching right there. That is coaching to, hey, it doesn't matter if it's on your side or where it's at, you are coach, you're blocking till the whistle, because when he's blocking that guy early on, that play is 30 yards away from him. It's not even close. And if he doesn't make that block – instead of being a 30-yard touchdown, maybe that's a 5-10-yard gain. Well, that's a huge play right there.
It's more than that, too, because it's symbolic of the buy-in. I mean, here we are in the spring game. That demonstrates to me that that's something he's been doing repetitively throughout the spring, and it's now second nature that, boom, I'm heading down there and making sure that play goes for more than just a decent gain, but maybe it springs for a touchdown.
If you look at Iowa State's receivers, since they're big, they should be really good blockers, which will help the running game a lot. And that brings me to one of my guys that kind of stood out to me, Dylan Soner.
Saner.
Mm. Saner?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why can I never say anyone's
remember
name?
Remember how I messed I with can. Remember I couldn't get Shedda the Shredda for a while. It happens.
I mean, speaking of guys that just looked the part, that's a massive dude. And I've been on record as saying I think they should turn him into a left tackle, but I don't even know if they necessarily have to, because you can put him tackle. And he can block. I mean, he was fast enough to go out and catch some passes. He doesn't look like this slow, lumbering tight end.
Right.
He can move. I mean, he's not lightning fast, but he can move. And he can make some plays.
He's a guy that you, like, put in the red zone.
Yeah.
And then you just say, okay, we're just going to throw it up in the air, go get it. Or you just have him go, like, right to the middle of the field, and he just, like, boxes somebody out, like a linebacker or something like that, you know, like on third down.
I'm excited about him for blocking.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Blocking and the tight end. I mean, haven't had a good blocking tight end in how long?
Woody came up to me in the middle of the game, and he was just raving about Saner and his blocking ability.
Oh, man, it stood out. And it helps when you're 6'8", 280. I mean, if you're that big, it helps, right? So he stood out to me. Rob, who you got?
Well, I think it would be remiss. I mean, the elephant in the room. I mean, Joel Lanning, you touched on how he responded on that play, but the pick six of Jacob Park, kind of right place, right time. But I mean, he just seems to, the read ability seems to be there for him. And you know, the competitiveness is there for him, and you know, the physical gifts are there for him. And it's really exciting to think about, even though it's been the topic du jour all throughout the spring, and maybe almost overly so. I think the fact that he more or less seems to have solidified his spot. Now, what does he do in the summer to be in a position to be the number one Mike in the fall? That's just really exciting to think about. And when John Haycock was asked how much will he be available to you, he just said, I hope every snap.
Right.
You know, that tells you something, that your DC has seen that type of potential productivity from you and leadership from you as a new guy, not playing there since eighth grade. And, the spring game, he showcased it probably the best way you can, a pick six from your Mike linebacker is pretty cool.
Did you guys see what Jacob Park said he did after that play?
Uh-uh.
I think they were running back to the sidelines, and Lanning flipped him off.
Did he? Yeah. That's awesome. See, that's great.
They used to celebrate each other last season, and now it's like, hey, I'm sure, you know,
you
that was
appreciate a, that. If, yeah, if for sure.
That was a jocular kind of, you know, just kind of like, hey, you know.
Well, I think that they're probably buddy. Yeah. Just from the way that they talk about each other.
Yep.
He's going to be the starting middle linebacker.
Yeah, I don't know how.
It's not. Yeah. I mean, that's not going to change. I mean, I was talking to someone afterwards, and they said that the defense has an identity now with, mm-hmm. with Lanning back there. And he's done so much for that defense just as far as bringing it together, having a leader. You look at it, they don't have a whole lot of returning guys on there. I mean, sure, Cotton Moya, but he's been out so much, he hasn't been in there. You look at who they had at safety. Mike Johnson obviously has his own issues. I don't think he's even currently on the team.
Yep.
They don't have anyone safety who's played any minutes that was playing in the spring game.
Mm-hmm. Good experience at corners.
Good experience at corners, yep. But the line, I mean, we like the line and the way they look, but
Vernell Trent,
Jaquan Bailey are about the only J.D. Wagner, I guess.
Yeah, but he was out, you know.
Yep. So you know, he's been able to solidify that group for him a little bit and bring the, hey, you know, he's a captain. People forget that. This guy is a captain. He's well-respected on the team. He works hard. He's got a good attitude. And now you put him in the middle of that defense, and he's not going to – I mean, barring something unforeseen, he's going to be the starting middle linebacker next year.
I agree.
And I think that – it's been a while since Iowa State's had a guy that's like a vocal leader like that, you know. It seems like he's probably willing to come in there and impose his will on the defense. Like, this is how we're going to do it.
Not inclined. I mean,
I mean, maybe even Jeremiah
George to a degree.
Maybe.
But he had so little around him where when it was not Klein and also George in the mix, that was a different animal. But I don't know. I agree. It has been a long time since you've had that level of leader. Who can back it up with the physicality? And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what that leads to in terms of, you know, a more stringent defense.
Have you said two guys?
Yeah, he did.
Mike Warren and Joel Anderson.
Yep.
Who do you got?
Jatarius Grant.
God, you stole mine.
The safety. He looks good.
He does. He looks – I mean, he needs to put on about 15 more pounds. He's a little skinny, but
– but for going to be a redshirt freshman?
He looks good.
Yeah.
I agree. I like him. And honestly, I wish I could break down his game. But just – once again, it's hard to tell if guys are doing what they're supposed to be doing in a spring game when everyone's out there. But to me, it's what guy you look at and say, that's a Big 12 football player.
Right.
He looked like it.
Definitely. Chase Allen.
Chase Allen looks like a Big 12 football player. Yep. They
Bryce Meeker's been a big story of the spring, too.
He's way bigger than he was a year ago.
And, again, the versatility you see going to guard. We got good Jones at center. I mean, I know it's been a big talking point, even going back to the previous regime, how you needed guys to be flexible because you didn't have enough depth there. I think we're still hopefully in the latter stages of that, in part because of injuries that they've had and bringing in new guys and bringing them up like Sean Foster, other red shirts and true guys. But – you know, you always like to see that flexibility, and Meeker has done very well doing that. Now, once you've done that, Nick Fett moved back and forth a little bit. Other guys, even Patrick Scoggins to a degree, was moving around amid the injuries. You've got a lot of possibilities you can do when maybe you're three or four less bodies than some of the upper-tier schools, as long as you can stay reasonably healthy.
Foster's pretty physically impressive as well.
Yeah.
Which I don't think would come as a surprise to anybody, but...
You know what? I don't even remember seeing him on Saturday. I was watching the defense more than the offense.
I was going to say, I think it's hard to probably evaluate the talent from the offensive line just by watching, like, in live.
If I noticed an offensive lineman on Saturday, it was for the wrong reasons.
Right.
Because I was watching the defense more. There's a couple. We don't need to talk about who got beat. But
well, I mean, it's just hard right now even to really say, like, what that line's going to look like until you get Campos back, you get David Dawson here. Because mm-hmm. I think there's guys that probably aren't even playing the position that they'll end up playing.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, in the spring game, there were, what, 10 starters not playing in that game? Probably.
It's quite a few. I'm not sure if it was quite that many, but yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Because Lazard didn't play.
Lazard, yeah.
Jones didn't play.
Yeah.
Campos didn't play. We don't know about Dawson. He may or may not start. Lima didn't play. Katmoya didn't play.
Reagan Northrop didn't play. He'll fit in there somewhere.
Yep. Leo might start, maybe not. We don't know.
Yeah.
Taking it slow with him, every indication. But
did you say Campos?
I said Campos. Okay.
What about the other big D, T, that whose name I can't pronounce, that isn't on campus yet? You mentioned.
Oh, Camilo.
Oh, Camilo. Yeah.
So seven, maybe? Seven
at
guys
least.
That could potentially start that didn't even play. Which I think is promising. The one guy I wanted to see, and I get why they held him out because of his injury last year. I want to see Zeb Nolan, and he did a little bit of the 7-on-7 drills before, But yep. I got there right when he – I think he threw two passes and then they were done and I never got to see him. But
he throws a good ball though the time that I watched him.
Yeah.
I mean, he can spin it for sure.
Ah, I wish I would have got in there a little earlier. So, all right. Let's transition off here. I had basketball recruiting, but we'll hit on football here first.
Okay.
Just a question to throw out there. I'm going to be a little bit of a Debbie Downer and just you guys talk me off the ledge. This time last year at the end of April, we'll go to the end of April, Iowa State had 8 commitments. So far, we have 1 for 2018. Still have a little bit of April left still. Anything to be worried about?
Wasn't it like in the next week, though, that they really caught fire and got a bunch like right in a row?
Yeah, I think they had 4 or 5 at this point, and then they got 4.
Yeah.
Well, because I think
like,
the month.
Like Richard Bowen's committed, and like there was a bunch of guys that committed right in a row right at the beginning of April.
So you're saying they're not running out of gas?
Well, I would say I heard
– I think they're warming up the engine.
So on Saturday, I was told that the – live period for them to get out and visit, guys, starts on April 15th. Iowa State will get out on April 17th, so that Monday. It's a week from yesterday.
They'll be out there getting
on the road to see guys. I would say that there you could maybe see some more commitments that come into play in that time period.
That's good to know. What are they doing the 15th and 16th, huh? I mean, these guys think they don't have to work or
what? Well, maybe they'll have some guys on campus.
It's Easter, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's true.
Being a little sarcastic. That makes sense. And, yeah, if you look at it, I do believe they had three or four guys after the spring game that committed to them.
Yeah.
Who's the next guy?
Well, the thing about some of the guys they've had on campus recently is, like, a lot of them have been 2019 kids.
Yeah, they have.
You know, I mean, they haven't even had overly many 18 kids to even be here.
Do we know at this point how big they're looking for the class?
I can't imagine it'll be that big.
18?
Yeah.
It's a smaller class.
Yeah.
Because 17 was so big and, yeah.
Yeah. So
a lot of young players in the program.
They can be a little bit more selective, and mm-hmm. I feel like they probably filled some gaps. There's still gaps in the program, obviously. The offensive line still, they got to keep bringing in players.
Right. D-line, too, until something's D-line. Proven, and yep. linebacker to some degree. Yeah.
Well, because they filled the gaps very well in the D-line, but they filled them with JUCO guys,
yep.
right?
We don't know yet, though they look the part, for sure.
Well, they give you a nice little 2 to 3 year gap mm-hmm. where now you can bring in these high school kids, you can redshirt, bring them along a little bit, and by the time these junior college kids get out, hopefully they're ready to go. I mean, we'll see with Jamil Johnson and Bailey. Hopefully in 2-3 years, those guys are legit Big 12 defensive tackles for Iowa State. But, yeah, they'll keep recruiting. Do you have any – Jared, do you have anyone on the horizon who you think is going to commit next? Give me a prediction.
I guess I'd say if I had to make a prediction, someone like Trevor Downing maybe, you know, like that could be a possibility, but I'm not sure that he's even going to do that.
He's got to be up there top three on their board right
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely in that top group. But I'm not sure. Like it's hard at this point. I just haven't talked to enough of the guys, it seems like, to really be able to like make a prediction like, yeah, this guy's like right on the verge of a commitment, you know.
Well, let's talk about Downing. How big of a commitment would he be? Just because if you really think about it, when was the last time, if ever, Iowa State has gone head-to-head with Iowa for an offensive lineman and got him?
Did Iowa go after Campos?
Well, but Campos was different because he was committed to Missouri.
Missouri, yeah.
Iowa State flipped him for Missouri.
Okay.
So to me, that was a little – I'm talking about straight up at the beginning, head-to-head. Iowa State doesn't beat Iowa for these kids. They just
don't. I don't think so.
So I think it'd be huge for Campbell and his staff on their – really kind of their second go-around, but almost like their first when they're real – they've been here for a while.
Entrenched.
Firmly entrenched.
Yes.
For them to go head-to-head with Ferentz, who's got a great history as far as producing offensive linemen, and beat them out for an in-state kid.
I'd say Sterling Gaubon, the receiver from Texas, he'd probably be in that conversation to be the next first commit, I guess, of this time period.
Okay.
He was just on campus, what, 2 weekends ago?
What? Can you read us off who's on campus this week?
Yeah. Got to pull up the list here. They obviously had some guys – or they had some guys that weren't able to – make it. I did like 6 interviews on Saturday, so I've posted only 2 of the stories so far. So I'll have a bunch more stories here throughout the rest of the week.
A week chock full of excellent recruiting stories.
I backloaded them just so that I would make sure I had stuff for the whole week.
Well, I got a where are they now on Scott Kristofferson out today.
Anybody who is listening to this, which is everybody in what about a 6-8 radius?
I'd say so.
Yeah, yeah. Listen to this.
And perhaps in Ukraine.
Jump on there. Rob's Where Are They Now are always some of my favorite articles to read on Cyclone Fanatic. Did a great job, as always, on this one. Scotty.
Thank you.
Scotty's one of those guys, too, who people almost forget about, because when they think of Iowa State turning, you know, getting out of the Greg McDermott into the Fred Hoiberg era, they think Royce White.
Yep.
You know, he's the one.
And started. I, on our podcast, yeah. I went all Royce.
We never even mentioned Scotty.
Yeah.
But he had as big of an impact because he was there for the rough time, too. Mm-hmm. And he was there on Fred's first team, one of the only Big 12 quality players playing on Fred's first team.
With Deontay. With Garrett.
And I mean,
you know, a few guys, but yeah, not.
I mean,
Not very many guys, period.
Jake Anderson, 6'2", led the team with like 8 rebounds a game. I mean, that kind of.
He was a warrior that year.
He was. He had to be. It's, you know,
and they all had to be. Yeah.
So, you know, Scotty was kind of one of those guys that it's easy to forget about, but you go back and you look, he was a great basketball player at Iowa State. He did a lot of good things and shot the hell out of the ball.
Yeah, and he bridged also the last year of McDermott, too. Yeah. So you go from, you know, then there's the new open thread, and then boom, they get back to the tournament, get to the second round.
Who were the three guys? It was him, Deontay, and Big Silky, right? Jamie Vanderbeek?
That sounds right.
Vanderbeeken. I was drawing a blank there with the name.
Yeah.
Those are the only three guys, weren't they, that return when Fred took over?
I believe so. A lot of turnover, a lot of change.
You think
mostly
about that.
Mostly positive, obviously, given what's happened since. Yeah.
All right, so this was our the list of visitors for the spring game. Noah Shannon, a defensive tackle from Illinois. He's got an Iowa State offer. Number 54 defensive tackle in the class by composite. Arkansas, Cincinnati, Iowa, Kansas State, Minnesota, Missouri. He's 2018. Zadane Thomas, a running back from Arizona. This kid's good. I don't know if you watched this film.
I have not.
Yeah, this kid... He doesn't have many offers right now, but I'm wondering if it's a situation where he lived in Florida and then moved to Arizona and then moved back to Florida and then moved back to Arizona. But he's pretty widely regarded as the best running back in Arizona. Ran for 2,300 yards as a junior. He's drawn interest from Arizona, Arizona State, and Colorado as well, but he has an Iowa State offer.
Is he the little guy?
Yeah, 5'9", 195.
I have watched his tape.
A little bit thick.
Yeah, he can... He's pretty tough. Yeah. They were Mario Goodrich and Marquand McCall both didn't make it to the game. Jaden Reed, a wide receiver from Illinois. He doesn't have an Iowa State offer yet, but he'll be somebody to probably watch in the next couple months. Bryson Williams, a defensive tackle from Lincoln, doesn't have an Iowa State offer, but he's another guy that I think would be here in the next month or so, or even once camps get started. Would be probably in the conversation to get one. He has offers from Iowa, Kansas State, Ohio, Navy, UCF, some more. Had a pretty good showing at the opening in Chicago. Henry Janeway, he's a defensive end from Michigan. I couldn't find any offers outside of smaller schools, but he's another guy that I think they're probably kind of in wait-and-see mode. Grant Gagne, a kicker from Ohio. I've watched this film. I mean, he's a kicker. And
I'll wait for Tommy Burch to break that down.
Yeah. Logan Klemp is an outside linebacker from Jewell. He goes to South Hamilton. He's another guy that probably during the camp circuit could maybe end up with an offer.
When's the camp circuit? That's usually June, right?
Yeah, that's in June. Yeah. Alex Allen, that's the brother of Chase Allen. He's 6'6", 220. And I talked to him the other day. I'm actually going to write that story as soon as we get done with this podcast. And it sounds like he's another guy that they're kind of in wait-and-see mode when he gets back from – or when he gets up here for some camps. I would not be surprised to see him end up with an Iowa State offer at that point. Tariq Brown, wide receiver from Valley. Those are all the 2018 guys. And then Tymon Mitchell, he's a defensive tackle. I talked to him the other day, so we have an update on the site with him right now. He's also got offers from Louisville and Vanderbilt and has received a lot of interest from Tennessee. He told me that he was not really sure what to expect from Iowa State, and he wasn't even really considering Iowa State before he came on his visit, but it really opened his eyes. Now they're one of his favorites. So but he's a 2019 kid.
Just got to get him here, right?
Fans showing up.
Yeah.
Right there.
Dwan Mathis, obviously the only commit for Iowa State in the 2019 class. And then Ezra Miller, he was a top 100 recruit from – He goes to Ridgeview. He's from Holstein, Iowa. And he's 6'6", 287. And he picked up an Iowa State offer over the weekend. I've got an update with him on the site, too.
Is he the one grew that I saw grew up as an Iowa fan?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. That'd be
there've been a few that grew up as Iowa fans that turned into pretty good Cyclones.
Well, yeah, he seemed like
he's going to be one that's going to get offers from both.
Well, yeah.
He seemed like he was pretty open to – well, he has an Iowa offer. Those are the only two that he has right now. And he hasn't even – I mean, he's only a sophomore. He hasn't reached out to any other schools or anything to where he could get an offer from them.
So he's obviously camped somewhere, right? To be a sophomore to have this high of a rating, he's camped somewhere, correct?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that – I think his film must be pretty – dang impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I watched it. It's for a sophomore. It's solid.
Yeah. He's definitely going to be a guy to watch here in the next 2 years, I guess. Peoria, Illinois offensive tackle, Marquez Cox made it to campus. He was kind of a late addition, I think. I saw him walking around. He has an Iowa State offer, number 78 offensive tackle in the class. And then one more was Maurice Massey. He's like a wide receiver from. I don't remember where he's from for sure, but he picked up an Iowa State offer over the weekend as well, and I talked to him. So I'll have an update with him later this week.
So that's it? It's all that they had on campus? I'm being sarcastic. That's a lot of names.
Oh, and they had all the 17, or the majority of the 2017 guys.
Oh, they were here?
Yeah. So.
And those guys will be showing up on campus, what, first week of June? Do you think that – do they come right away or
– Most of them do, yeah. They'll be here for the summer sessions.
Very nice. Good job, Jared.
Thanks.
I look forward to your update on Chase Allen's brother. What's his first name again?
Alex.
Alex. Alex, yeah. Allen.
He has offers from Wyoming and Army right now.
Iowa State's had a lot of brothers, it seems like. The Knott brothers, the Sandvig brothers, Lazard's brother, obviously, mm-hmm. is at Iowa State.
Sounds like he's going to be a defensive player, though.
Bailey's?
Yeah.
Bailey's, yeah.
Jones.
Well, and
who?
If you remember...
Deshaunte Jones. Yeah, yeah, gosh, yeah.
If you remember back to Chase's recruitment, that didn't really heat up until... Because he went all the way through the summer, didn't have an Iowa State offer, and then it was after his senior season that it really started to heat up to the point where, it, you know, Michigan offered, Florida State offered, Nebraska offered. Paul Rhodes didn't offer him, though. Do you remember that?
I do remember.
Yeah.
What a huge get. I mean, when you start to get guys with that kind of offer, you know, Alan Lazard, kind of a special case in there, but excited to see about that. I knew his dad a little bit, Terry Allen, from covering – NBC football when he was at Missouri. So obviously he was a great coach at UNI. Really, really, really good family. The more Allens you can have, the better for your program.
Yeah. Alex was a pretty well-spoken kid in the time that I talked to him.
Good. Is he about your height?
Yeah, yeah. So he saw him walking around.
So
I'm not sure.
He's legit.
I'm not sure that I believe in the 220, but yeah, he's definitely at least 6'6", 6'7".
How much do you weigh?
Probably like 215.
You could post him up, you're saying? You could take him down low? If you're calling out as 220, you're saying you're kind of calling him scrawny a little bit.
Well,
you take him down low?
Well, I mean, Chase is still pretty scrawny, too.
He is.
For being 6'6",
yeah.
230.
Chase could still afford to put on 20.
I'm not saying that I'm not scrawny, so I don't know how. Like, I don't know why you're saying that.
No, you are. I was wondering, you know, if you're calling out the young man's weight.
No, I'm not calling him out. I'm just saying I don't think that he's probably 220, so don't.
Yeah. I always take the height and weight with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Especially in basketball.
But his height I would say is legit, but I'm not sure about his.
How tall is he with cleats on and a helmet?
I have no idea.
That's what they play in, Jared, right? They play in cleats and helmet. So why do they measure him without cleats and helmet on?
In basketball when they go to the combine and they measure somebody and is without shoes and he's 6'2 and 3/4.
Yeah.
And then they put him in his shoes and he's like 6'4.
6'4, yeah. It's the dumbest thing in the world. Wait, only in basketball do they measure people with shoes on.
Adam, I haven't even seen him, but judging by what Jared said, I'm just going to say in cleats 6'6", 1/16. That's what I'm going with.
All right. He's
worn down cleats, though.
Yeah,
so he might get up to
You throw that helmet on, he could be getting up close to 6'8", 6'9".
It's like in the
darn
movie.
Tootin'.
Have you guys seen the movie Fletch?
Yeah.
Chevy Chase. He says he's 6'2", but 6'9", with the afro.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a good movie.
It is.
It's been
a while, too.
Well, thanks to the Heartland Flags for sponsoring this podcast, the crossover podcast between Two Shades of Gray and On the Trail. Transition over now from football recruiting to basketball recruiting. Obviously, this is a busy time for the staff. This is kind of the pressure pack because everything's moving so fast, and it was never more true than it was yesterday. All of a sudden, there was a tweet out. I forget who said, I think maybe Gary Parrish tweeted out that the Lawson brothers, who were down in Memphis, two really good basketball players, were considering Duke, Kansas, Iowa State, and another school.
Ole Miss.
30 minutes later, these two have committed to Kansas. So it just kind of shows you how quick everything is moving.
Yeah.
Well, I think their dad must have been on Gary Parrish's radio show. Then that's when he said the thing about the schools they're considering. Then all of a sudden it was like right away. Yeah. Boom. Going to Kansas.
Yeah. Which, you know, those two are good enough that, I mean, especially Dedrick. Mm-hmm. He'll pull. I mean, that dude's good. But I look at this as a positive for Iowa State. Now, obviously Kansas is going to get better, but they're always going to get players, right? Bill Self's going to get players. They're always going to be good. But Iowa State's top recruit right now, Justin, mm-hmm. is between Iowa State and Kansas, we presume. I got to imagine he's looking at them now and saying, I don't want to go there because my senior year, I have two Lawson brothers that are going to be there as well as three or four other guys. I mean, that's that area. That's going
to be blue chippers, McDonald's, yeah. All-Americans.
I have developing. To think yesterday was a good, good day for Iowa State. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, if I guess the mindset that I would have if I'm Shakir Justin in that situation, it's like you have 2 years to play college basketball left. Why would you want to go to a place where you could put yourself into a position to be recruited over? Even if it's that you're not playing well enough. I mean, Kansas is going to go try and get the best. If it's like, okay, we need a power forward. All right, let's get that guy. Okay, well, he's the number two recruit in the country, you know, and it's a possibility every single year. So it just seems like that would be – I don't know why you would want to do that as a junior college guy.
Well, part of me says if the kid's competitive enough, he's going to say, I don't care. I'm going to beat these guys out anyway. I think I'm better than them, and I'm just now going to have the opportunity to show it. And I thought you're Iowa State. You want them still to think that they're good enough to play at Kansas. You don't want a guy that's coming to Iowa State because he
Well, no, I'm not.
I can't compete with those guys.
I don't mean it like that, but I'm saying at Kansas, you're just going to be another guy. Yeah. But if you come to Iowa State, you're going to be a star.
A dude.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would think the guaranteed thing. It's like we've talked about before, guys who are highly recruited offensive linemen or something that are fine going to one of the six or seven more blue blood programs, knowing how many guys are going to recruit, knowing some of the stuff that happens where – you know, offers are out there and then they're gone. And I mean, all this stuff, why wouldn't you want to go someplace where, you know, particularly when you know for the next level, excuse me, you can go a lot of places and be seen as well as long as you can perform. So Iowa State with this pace of play really pushed the Jayhawks, turned into a nice rivalry. You see those guys go there, you know what they've got before. You've seen track record at Kansas too, with lots of really highly touted guys that get somebody new comes in and goes over them, or they have a little bit of a scrape and something, they go down to the doghouse and they never really emerge. At Iowa State, you're going to emerge. Right. Unless, you know, it's something severe.
Well, think about a guy like Carlton Bragg, who was widely regarded as a five-star recruit, top 10, top 15 guy in the class. I mean, obviously he had his off-the-court struggles, but I would say that at a lot of places, it would be hard to say that Carlton Bragg's career was, you know, bad. But I think that if you ask Kansas fans, they're probably going to say he didn't live up to the expectations. And it's like, I would say that if you're him, you know, all of a sudden he's coming off the bench, your seventh, eighth man.
Yep.
That would be very frustrating to be a guy like that, that all of a sudden you've been recruited over to the point where you're barely playing.
To be fair.
But he also, like I said, he had those off-the-court issues that obviously hurt him.
Yeah. Kansas is always weird with those big guys. They bring them along slower than other. And by the time those guys are juniors and seniors, they're really. You look at Thomas Robinson. I mean, the transition he made. But we're not talking about Kansas.
You have to trust the process, unless you are the process.
Unless you are the process. Yeah, not everyone's getting a Joel Embiid to come in and play from day one. Iowa State's got what, four or five scholarships available still?
Four. Yeah.
How do you want to see those scholarships? If it was you, you're the coach. You're Steve Prohm, Jared. How you feel in those four spots based on who they're after right now?
Well, obviously, Justin.
Justin's number one. Me and you are on the same page, are you?
I would say Daryl Edwards or Elijah Brown.
Okay.
Kind of an either or type situation there. I don't know if you've taken both. I don't know what you guys think about that.
I think you could take them both because Elijah Brown would be a one-year guy.
Yeah.
So you're not tying yourself up to a scholarship long-term.
I think the thing people are forgetting about Elijah Brown, I've seen a lot of people say stuff about how he's turnover prone, he didn't shoot the ball very well, some stuff like that. And I don't think that the situation at New Mexico was very good this year. You know what I mean?
He had Noodles as his coach.
Yeah.
Craig Neal.
And he got fired very quickly after the season was over.
Yes.
And they had some games that they probably should have won that they did not win.
Like when they were 15 points against Nevada.
Like I said, I think that there was probably some behind-the-scenes things at New Mexico that just were not very good this year.
So those ideal situation. So you got to pick one. I'm not letting you do this back and forth wishy-washy.
All right. Well, I guess in a best case scenario, I would say Brown. For next year's team, I would say Elijah Brown.
Yep.
And then I'd say Ed Morrow, the transfer from Nebraska. Obviously, he would sit out and play. But to play 2 years, that would be pretty good outlook for 2018, 19, and 2019, 20, I guess. And, that last one. I'd say Shyock, I guess. The guy from Virginia, Mariel Shyock.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that would be the best. Those four would be the best case scenario in my mind.
I completely agree on every one of those. Because really, I mean, two guys sitting out, you never like to have two guys, but you're not playing 13 guys in a game. You're not playing 11. At the most, you might play 9. So I think it's perfect that two guys sit out. You have that there, and you fill a need. With Justin, you get a rebounder, someone that can kind of do the dirty work, which Iowa State needed terribly this year,
yeah.
And they'll need it again next year.
Well, I'd say if you've got Justin and Solomon Young as your front line,
yeah.
You know, people are going to be like, well, we don't have a 6'9 guy. Okay,
you're still undersized.
That's still a pretty good front line to have, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa State's not going out right now and finding a 6'10, 6'11 guy. They're not going to. So, to me, the biggest need for them is to go get a rebounder. And right now, of all the rebounders I've seen, Justin is the best.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they need. So, he is, number one, the guy they got to get. And then they got to get a shooter. So, whether that's Brown or Edwards, I'd probably lean towards Brown just because he's played it at this level. I would take him. Edwards, to me, I don't know. I'm not crazy about him. Am I wrong, Jared?
No, I wouldn't say so. His JUCO numbers weren't that.
And all you need
weren't overly impressive to me.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it is what it is.
Brown, sure, okay, he turns the ball over a lot. Well, Iowa State probably is not going to have him run the point or be the primary ball handler. They're going to have other guys with Wigington and Jackson who can distribute. So he's there to slash, almost the Naz Long roll.
Yeah.
Shoot the three, get to the hole, play some defense. You've done what we need you to do. They don't need him to go out there and get 4 or 5 assists a game, which I'm guessing New Mexico probably needed him to do.
Yeah.
I was really interested, too. Williams dropped the guy from Weber State's name, the Max All-Star.
Wright State.
Wright State?
Yeah, I thought so.
You're probably right.
Yeah, I think it's Wright State.
All-Stork?
Yeah, All-Stork, yeah.
All-Stork, yeah. He's intriguing. 6'5", 6'6", decent size.
Yeah.
Can do a little bit of everything.
Sounds like that one's going to take – that process is going to take longer to play out, though, because he's going through the whole NBA thing.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, and then he's going to grad transfer.
Because let's be honest, he's not going to the NBA.
No, he's not going to go to the NBA. But he'll, like I said, that process will probably take some time to play out because he won't – it's not like he's going to decide tomorrow or like, all right, yeah, I'm probably not going to the NBA.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we're on the same page. You got to get a guy that can shoot, and you got to get a guy that can rebound and place him down low a little bit. And from there, two guys that sit out are perfectly fine. And I know we talked about this a little bit before we got on the air. Waukee guy, and you went to Nebraska. Michael Jacobson, you're a big Nebraska fan. I don't think there'd be
– Thanks for dropping that in there. Of course, you mentioned it at any opportunity.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that I wasn't supposed to say that. It's funny here. We're sitting in your home office.
No, we're not in my home office.
Oh, we're not?
Well, this is my living room.
Okay, if I could look through the door here, I could look. Oh, what is this hat? It was big N.
Dude, I was at Jethro's the other night.
Does that stand for knowledge?
I was literally at Jethro's the other night, and I was sitting at the bar, and a guy said, "Hey, dude, where'd you get your Netflix hat?"
Nice. It looks like it.
Yeah, and he's like, I looked at him, and I was like,
he was making a joke, right?
No, he wasn't. He was dead serious.
That's awesome.
I was like, I can't tell if you're being serious or not. And he's like, and his friend's like, no, he is. And I was like, it's Nebraska, dude. And he's like, oh, my bad. So I thought it was Netflix. I thought that was really cool. I was like, no.
He didn't once he learned it was Nebraska.
That just goes to show you how much that brand has fallen off the table right there. When all of a sudden,
or how much the N just looks like the Netflix N.
It really does.
It does, yeah. This
well,
particular
it's
one.
It's black with red.
Yeah.
I mean, that... Yeah, it looks like Netflix.
Yeah.
But if I'm looking through your into your home office here, I see some Osborne, the pass. Or is it the pass or the catch?
It was the catch.
The catch.
Matt Davison at Missouri.
Throws it to Eric Crouch?
No.
What was the Eric Crouch
Scott play? Frost threw it to
Scott
Matt Davison.
Scott Frost, that's right.
Yeah. There's
yeah.
one with Jason Peter and Grant Wistrom.
Yeah.
What's the other one? Oh, from their first national championship that they won. They're all autographed. It's cool, though.
No, that's great. Yeah, it's great.
They were in my bedroom at home, and Clarendash brought them up here.
No, that's awesome. Good, that's cool.
Glad you brought it
See,
up.
See, I'm glad that you did this, and just now you make me look like an idiot.
So back to this. So Michael Jacobson has come out. He's transferring, one of four guys leaving 10 miles, and staff over there at that program that looks like Netflix.
Did you see my did you like my text this morning about the guy that 10 miles caught in a car crash? And I was like, this guy's taking getting Nebraska a new basketball coach very seriously.
He is. Hey, whatever it takes, man.
I guess so.
Whatever it takes. So, yeah, he's transferring as well. I think it was a Lincoln Star.
Actually, Marty and Miller broke the story.
Lincoln Journal Star.
Oh, Lincoln Journal Star. I apologize.
There's an old print guy. Come on.
Did you hear me?
Okay.
I messed it up by sticking up for the old print media.
I'm going to get to the point here.
Let's just do it.
He is interested in at least looking at Iowa State. And a lot of Iowa State fans, and this is up on Cyclone Fanatic, they're not interested in him. This kid averages 6 points, 6 rebounds a game. I wouldn't put him in the top four. I probably wouldn't even put him in the top six of the list of the guys that we're after right now. But I would not be terribly upset if Iowa State had a scholarship open left in about a month from now and they signed Jacobson and he joined the program. Here's a kid who's going to work hard. He's way more athletic than people realize. He'd be one of the best athletes on the team.
Well, he tested out as the best athlete in Nebraska's athletic department last year.
That's Nebraska. Like that just
in the, I'm just saying the whole athletic department. He tested out as the best athlete in the whole athletic department.
Even more than you're talking football and everything.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
We saw how Nebraska football was last year too.
Well, okay? I mean that's still something to note that he was the best athlete in the whole athletic department.
He's a very, very good athlete. Probably should be playing tight end in college, to be completely honest.
Yeah,
with
Paul
you.
Rhodes offered him the scholarship as a tight end.
Yep. But he's not, and I think he's one of those guys. Listen, not everyone can be a dude. Not everyone can come in and you expect to score 15 points. You got to get guys that, hey, your role is 15 minutes off the bench. I want you scoring 6 points, getting 6 rebounds, maybe blocking a shot. How bad did Iowa State need that player last year?
Yeah.
They struggled all year to try to find that guy until finally Solomon Young did it at the starting role. Can you imagine if they were able to bring someone like that off the bench, which I think he could do that? I would have no problem if Steve Prohm and his staff went out and got this guy. Now, if they got him right now and he was the first one they signed, a little worried.
Yeah.
You know?
A quick little nugget. Him and Ed Morrow are very good friends.
Are they?
From what I hear, yes.
Would it be okay with you if we took them as a 1-2 punch?
I think that would be solid. Especially, I mean, they're both going to be sit one, play two guys.
They're very similar in what they do, though, aren't they? Or is Morrow Morrow's more skilled? Morrow's the better of the two players.
Yeah. Well, and the problem for them is that they both didn't want to play the five at Nebraska, and that's why they're leaving.
Well, I don't really blame them. They're both not.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's what the deal was. They both felt like they were playing out of position. They didn't want to do that anymore.
Well, you come to Iowa State, and you're one of the bigger guys. You might be playing out of position again. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, I mean,
you look at it. Edgem, how many years did Edgem play out of position?
Yeah.
Solomon Young is probably better suited for four.
But maybe if your team is better and you don't have 10 miles as your coach, you're a little bit more willing to accept that role.
Maybe if your coach isn't tweeting during halftime, you're more willing.
He hasn't tweeted since December. He doesn't do that anymore.
Oh. Wow.
I'm not defending him, though. I'm not defending him.
Oh,
Can I wake up now,
Rob? I bet you were not expecting us that to.
What?
Let's end this on a fun conversation, a little debate here. And then
this hasn't been fun.
Now that everybody has skipped past the 10 minutes where you just talked about Nebraska,
I hadn't trolled.
I think
you in a while,
you're the Nebraska fan.
I hadn't trolled you in a while. It had been a long time since I kind of. I know your dad's not going to appreciate this. He's going to be listening. He's going to be like freaking gray.
Yeah, I don't think. Have we ever said anybody that? Yeah, my dad. My dad doesn't like Adam. No. Did you know that, Rob?
Really?
Yeah, he doesn't like it.
He's never met me, but he doesn't like me.
Mm.
I told him to get in line.
I think you need to have a face-to-face.
Get in line, buddy. All right, guys, here's the question. What happens first? Does Iowa State football go to a bowl game, or does Iowa State return to the NCAA tournament?
Rob, I'll let you go first.
Bowl game.
What are you doing over there?
You got these fine sandwiches for us earlier. I was just picking away a little bit.
Okay.
Again, I just woke up from the Nebraska nap. I always kind of take the half full approach with this team, but I think with the talent that they've got, this is definitely a legit team to contend for a bowl bid this year. And we saw, another season of not getting over the hump, not holding on to a big lead in a game you're, quote, not supposed to win, or losing a close game that you really maybe could or should have won. I think that they're in the process of putting that together. The culture indeed is truly changing. You're seeing the buy-in isn't just spoken, and that's been years in the making. You know, it's like, oh, I'm bought in. But you start to see things being demonstrated. You touched on it with some of the plays in the spring game. I mean, I think they've got the pieces. As long as the offensive line stays reasonably healthy, some of the JUCO guys like Lima and the guy whose name I can't pronounce are able to perform at the type of level we think they're capable of on the D-line. I think they get to a bowl game this year. Now, is it going to be a top tier? No. But to get back to a bowl game for the first time in 2012 would be huge.
I think so, too. For those same reasons.
Jared with a take of all takes. coming strong today.
I don't know what more I can add to it. Rob said that very eloquently.
It's probably too easy of a question because football plays, they play first, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
If they make it to a bowl game at all, then that
gives them a half a year of a leg up. I've been on record. I think this team goes to a bowl game. They did take a hit when Khalil Rogers decommitted from North Carolina because depth is still an issue on this program. And as long as they stay healthy, and knock on wood, I'm knocking on it right now.
Reasonably healthy. I mean, they can weather a few things.
Sure. It's certain spots, right?
Yep.
And they have a lot of depth of wide receiver. If they lose a wide receiver, they have other players that can step in. Offensive line, they still don't have a lot
of
depth.
Can't have a starter go down for the season like Campos.
Maybe a game you can kind of shuffle some things around, not long term. I still think this team is a 6-win team. I think they go bowling. A better question probably would have been, what happens first? Does Iowa State win 8 football games or go to the Sweet 16? That probably would have been a better question. You know what I mean? Because Iowa State has only won over 8 games one time in their program history. I think that's a fair question.
Yeah, true.
Because otherwise, listen, we're all drinking the Kool-Aid right now, right? Spring game just happened.
There's no reason not to now.
I think this coaching staff is very, very, very good, very talented, and they're close, which I think a lot of people mocked when Campbell first brought over a staff, and they compared it to Chizik. I never thought it was like Chizik. I thought Chizik was bringing in his buddies, who he never had coached with before. It had been a long time.
And these guys are buddies, but they're accomplished. You had Tom Manning with the assistant coach, the offensive line coach of the year. I mean, these guys are all extremely well-regarded and not kind of retread or...
When's the last
time? They were buddies that had won together.
Yes.
Chizik's buddies, they never won
from
together.
From the beginning up to here.
When's the last time Iowa State went through a full season, didn't have a coach leave or get fired? A single one. So they bring one staff from one year to the next.
The whole entire staff?
Yeah, I mean, essentially. At least on-field guys.
Well, it probably never happened with Rhodes because he ran a defensive backs coach off every year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it was like every year that there's like revolving door at some of those positions.
I think early on under Rhodes, that staff stayed reasonably intact.
The defensive backs coach is the only one I ever remember leaving early on.
Yeah, Elliott was there for a couple of years. So.
Was he? I thought he was just there 1 year. I could be wrong.
Well, somebody can correct us on that. But
yeah. And then Lindquist.
But even then, I mean, that's like 6 years.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the problem, too, with Iowa State and their quarterback and their offensive line. It seemed like, Arnott had 3 offensive coordinators.
Lanning
had 3 offensive coordinators. The consistency, that's one thing with, like, Gary Pinkel's staff in Missouri. He always kept that staff together. And, they might have had some struggles early on, but once they got going, everyone was on the same page. And I'm hopeful. I think Iowa State will do it. I think they'll do it sooner rather than later. I think they go bowling this year, and I think they just keep stepping it up a little bit.
Good note to end on.
It is a good note to end on. All right, guys.
Except for the flags. Let's send some people over to
Heartland. Yeah, I was just getting ready to tell people. Stop on HeartlandFlagpoles.com, or you can always stop into their showroom at 3719 Southwest 9th Street. Buy yourself some flags. The weather's turning. Get yourself some garden flags, too. I know, Rob, you spend a lot of time in the garden.
Oh, yeah.
You got any garden flags out there?
Certainly do. I'm looking for more.
Or do you have any – what do you have, Cubs? Or do you have, like – you probably have – non-sports.
I got a little Cubs, and I have I do have some non-sports.
Yeah
as with well. Birds.
Do you have any bird?
Lots
bird
of birds.
Yeah. Yeah. I look forward to that's one thing I've missed during the winter is your Facebook post with birds.
I've given the climate in recent months. I've done less on Facebook.
I have some nice mallards that live in the backyard.
But I should just do the birds.
Those are nice. Those are nice posts though. Those aren't
That's true. There's political. Nothing incendiary or
Who doesn't like a nice bird post?
I don't want to meet that person.
Oh, that's a good note to end on, too. All right. Thanks, fellas.
Go great read Rob Gray's Where Are They Now.
Thanks, and all of Jared's fine work coming up. And great to have this group together today.
All right.
See you. Bye.